Here's a question. Do you know where your internet comes from? Yesterday on The Conversation, we heard about how next-generation 5G wireless networks will eventually come to communities in Hawaii, but those local high-speed networks aren't worth much without a high-speed connection to the global internet, and that comes from a vast network of undersea cables crisscrossing the globe. Today we continue the conversation between our producer Ryan Finnerty and Bert Lum, Chief Strategy Officer for the Hawaii Broadband Initiative. And as Bert tells it, Hawaii needs to be proactive to avoid being bypassed by future high-speed internet cables.
So when we talk about 5G and all the different ways that we connect to the internet, I mean, basically we're connecting to the global internet network. And what is, I think, really important for Hawaii to keep in mind is the fact that, you know, we are located in the middle of the Pacific. So if you ask yourself, well, how do we actually get to the rest of the internet? I mean, it's one thing to connect to resources that are on island or in the state. It's another thing to think about, well, you know, how do we connect to the rest of the world? Well, the majority of the traffic that is considered the broadband network is being provided by what we call trans-Pacific fiber optic cables, which actually run under the ocean from places like Asia, Australia, New Zealand, all the way to the west coast of the United States and elsewhere. Now, Hawaii has a critical place to be in the middle of the Pacific, but at one time, cables would land in Hawaii and then retransmit back out to the west coast or out to Australia or New Zealand. But the technology has enabled a lot of the trans-Pacific fiber optic cables to bypass Hawaii. So I think one of the key things that we need to think about is how do we ensure that Hawaii stays, not only a robust network on the global network, but, we stay relevant in the development of these new technologies.
So if technology or new cable technology allows providers to bypass Hawaii, does that mean that we in Hawaii run the risk of falling behind the rest of the world in terms of connectivity and bandwidth and access?
What happens is that if all these trans-Pacific cables start to bypass Hawaii, there will be limited amount of capacity that enables us to be a player on the global network. So if we were to look at how we best develop a robust sort of tech community, the tech community relies heavily on, this broadband network. And if we are trying to convince some of the major players, whether it's the Googles or the Microsofts or the Amazons or the Netflixes or even Apple, to consider Hawaii as being a place to do any kind of business, we better have a pretty robust network. And I think, if we do run the risk of being somewhat limited by not incentivizing, any of these cables to land here, then we run the risk of being sort of irrelevant and pushed to the backwaters of the internet, and that would be pretty detrimental, I think, to the efforts of trying to develop a tech sector here in Hawaii.
Well, you're the Chief Strategy Officer for the Hawaii Broadband Initiative, Bert, and what kinds of incentives can you provide or when you're talking to cable providers or cable owners rather?
To consider, coming to Hawaii.
Yeah, how do you convince them to come here?
One of the things that we're working on is a way that we could actually do a lot of the sort of permitting and bring the barrier of entry for trans-Pacific cables to land in Hawaii. So one of the things that's been a long time identified barrier is, if a consortium, and these consortiums are the investors in these trans-Pacific fiber, if they are considering landing in Hawaii or a project that goes from, let's say, Australia to the West Coast, what are some of the obstacles for them to land in Hawaii? Well, one of the things is that, they got to get a landing place. That means land. They got to get a little building to, bring the...
Because the cable has to physically come ashore somewhere.
Yeah, they have to physically come ashore. And then there's all the permitting that takes place in order to do that. And if there's ways that we can help minimize that cycle and even help reduce the costs for that actual landing, then there's more incentive for those Trans-Pacific consortiums to actually land here. So that's one of the things that I'm working on. And then you know, how do we, you know, once they're here, how do they connect into the rest of the network? And I think, you know, there's ways that we can help incentivize that, and that would help those companies that are looking at that coming out here to extend their cloud, you know, to the edge of the network, which a lot of the software as a service companies are looking at. How do we make the edge of the cloud look robust and very you know, has the capacity to accommodate that edge of the cloud position for them to actually reside in?
Hawaii is a pretty small market, about 1.4 million people in the whole state, residents. Is there great economic incentive for these large providers to extend their networks here?
So what happens is that you know, it's like you're building a superhighway that you know, these companies can reside on. But then, you know, the superhighway also is a two-way street. So how do you know, what is it that we have to offer? Now, you said, you know, 1.4 million people. That's one thing that we have to offer, that, you know, those as end user customers. But we have to start really thinking about what is some of our value proposition to the rest of the world. And I think that's where, you know, how does Hawaii position its value to the rest of, you know, of the globe? And I think there's a lot of efforts going on in areas like clean energy, and how we as a community look at our management of Hawaii as a limited resource. And I think even considering some of the you know, Native Hawaiian cultural sort of understanding of our natural resources is really important, that I think once we start conveying that, and I think you know, Nainoa Thompson and the Around the World with the Hokulea was a way of conveying some of that. But I think there's a big value in our ability to export some of that knowledge. And I think, you know, if we can tap into that and get the rest of the world to realize the value that Hawaii has, and, you know, obviously we're in a very unique situation, I think we have some valuable expertise and knowledge to export. And to me, that's what we want to achieve, is exporting that kind of knowledge, as opposed to exporting the kids that, you know, go through the computer science and STEM and robotics. We don't want to export the kids. We want to export the knowledge.
But it sounds like your efforts are going to be pretty critical to making sure we have the ability to export that knowledge.
Well, I like to, you know, I like to see us, Hawaii, be more proactive in trying to build this kind of infrastructure. And oftentimes, you know, this infrastructure gets unrecognized because, you know, it's sort of way behind the scenes. But again, it's like building a you know, a freeway, or, you know, getting good water distribution, you know, through the community. You know, we oftentimes just see the, you know, the faucet, but we don't really understand or pay attention to where does that water come from. And similarly, you know, with the internet, I mean, we got our smartphones, we got our, you know, connections at home to connect our computers or laptops, but we, you know, we need to better build a robust, resilient backbone connection into the rest of the internet in order to, you know, be prepared and, you know, an active participant in sort of some of this 21st century technology, and that's kind of my goal.
That was Bert Lum, Strategy Officer for the Hawaii Broadband Initiative at the State Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism, speaking with conversation producer Ryan Finnerty. Bert is also the co-host of Hawaii Public Radio's tech-focused talk show, Bite Marks Cafe, and you can find past episodes of that program, or this one, on hawaiipublicradio.org.